Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday. And as we like to do on Sunday, October the 28th, I forgot to say that. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. A lot to get into today. I mean, we're going to get into the midterms. We're going to get into this blame game. I mean, just blaming Trump for everything, including these two incidents during the week. You know, the fellow who was allegedly sending the packages, and of course, the absolutely horrific shooting in Pittsburgh. I mean, it's just horrific. What else can you say? But blaming it on Trump, that's, I think, extremely irresponsible. President Obama is suddenly campaigning against President Trump. I find that fascinating. I thought ex-presidents didn't do stuff like that, but I guess President Obama has decided to do it. There's a caravan in Mexico. Exactly where they are, I don't know. They just rejected what I thought was a very generous offer from the government of Mexico. And when they get here, I don't know. But when they get here, I think they're going to run into a little problem at the border. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it's actually a beautiful day here in North Texas. What about there?
Actually, quite nice. It was miserable yesterday, absolutely miserable. But today is very nice. I made my usual trip to the supermarket for fine dining, you know, popcorn, peanuts, and stuff like that. And very, very nice. In fact, we expect a pretty nice week ahead.
It's going to be a killer week because...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you need popcorn when you do Urgent Agenda. You know, you have
to
keep yourself awake.
Up.
I guess. Well,
yes.
it pumps up. Yeah.
Well, so, keeping awake is the hard part, especially when, as you said, Barack Obama has been out campaigning, and all you do is pick up one of his speeches, and you can fall asleep in about 10 seconds.
Well, the other thing, too, with President Obama, aside from the fact that, you know, I don't want to get too technical, but I thought there was an understanding that presidents didn't do that. I mean, they, you know, I'm not saying they don't participate, but they're not quite that partisan in their participation. But have you noticed he's not drawing a lot of people wherever he goes? There's
no, I think he's kind of a forgotten guy. You know, he was elected as our first black president, which, you know, even though I didn't vote for him, I was a McCain and guy. But
sure.
I thought it was a wonderful racial breakthrough. The trouble
is
that for eight years, he didn't really perform as president. And I think
mm-hmm.
that is remembered, and I think he's remembered as a big disappointment. And I don't think that people are all that interested in what he has to say.
I think you're right, and I'm not even sure the Democrats are that interested in what he has to say. I mean, I think they pay it. I mean, they have to be courteous to him, but I don't really think he carries as much weight as he thinks he does. Bill, I wanted to take a minute here on top of the show. Our friend Bob Jaggers is in the hospital. We went to see him on Saturday. He is not, let's say, he's not really, really bad, but, you know, he's under watch. He turned 96 this summer. And, of course, what makes him, aside from being a great person, what makes him unique is he's one of the dwindling number of D-Day veterans in the country. But he told me he's working on a new book. So I mean, Bob's always busy. He's got a new book that he wants to write about all of the different countries that he's lived in, Bob. So he's a great guy. He's a great guy, and we wish him well. I know he's going to listen to the podcast later tonight, so... Bob, take care, and here's your friend Bill. He wants to say hello.
Well, yes. Well, Bob, you know, we honor your generation for all that it did and all that it continues to do. Keep writing that book. Keep writing that book. You know, you stay active, you live longer. That's one of the reasons I'll never stop, and I think you're a terrific guy for just continuing.
That's right. Well, that's right. So, Bob, enjoy the program tonight, and I'm going to drop in. When we were there on Saturday afternoon, Bill, we had a great time with Bob because he's a huge baseball fan. I mean, a tremendous baseball fan. He is a big Detroit Tigers fan. He lived in Detroit during many of his years. He grew up in Chicago, but he spent a lot of time in Detroit because he worked with one of the car companies. I don't remember which one now. And that's the car company that sent him to a lot of different countries where he worked in Mexico, he worked in Argentina and all of that. So, you know, a lot of life experiences beyond the military. But he's a huge baseball guy, and he reminded me of something that was in his book, you know, the one about D-Day, that when he was in the Navy, that, you know, Bob Feller was playing a baseball game, was pitching in a baseball game there with the other sailors, and he said that he got two hits off of Bob Feller.
Wow, so, that's terrific. off Bob Feller. I remember Bob Feller from my youth, and I believe that he once broke the record, and I think he pitched at 98 miles an hour, and I believe that he broke that record, if I recall correctly.
Well, he was up there. He was one of the first ones to, I think, cash in at 100. But of course, the technology back then is not like now. Now they give you the speed of the pitch, you know, on the TV screen. So
yes.
You don't need any more than that. But anyway, I know Bob's going to do just great, and I'm looking forward to that other book too. And when he writes that book, let me direct this message to Bob. Bob, when you finish that book, you'll join us on a Sunday night, and we can talk about that book. We'll talk about that book again. Another big story, Bill, before we get into the current events, is what just happened in Brazil, where Jair Bolsonaro was elected president. You cannot make up this story. This is a guy. He comes out of a military background, although he was also in the Congress. So people are trying to call him make him into a fascist. No, he's not. He went through the Congress, and he was a civilian when he ran, but he did serve in the military. And 62 years old, and when he was campaigning a few weeks ago, he was nearly killed. In fact, he almost bled to death on the way to the hospital. But his message is pretty simple. He wants to cut back state enterprises. He wants to go after the criminals, which is a big problem in Brazil right now, particularly
yes.
in the cities. And he wants to do something about corruption. Now, the corruption is actually that's already happening, actually, to be honest with you. But they call him a Brazilian Trump. And that's because he's not politically correct. He tells you what he thinks, somewhat like Trump. So let's hope he succeeds, because I think he's got the right idea, Bill.
Oh, well, I hope he succeeds also. He's pro-American, and
yes,
that itself is enough. And Brazil, being the most important country in Latin America, it's huge. It's a large country, and I believe it represents about half the land area and half the population of Latin America. Very important economy, growing economy before the world, and I hope he succeeds too. I suspect he'll be invited to Washington soon, where the Washington Press Corps will also call him a fascist, since that's the word of choice. That's the word
right.
of choice. And people forget that word of choice has been used for years. And yet, when you talk about people who spread hatred, they only want to look at Donald Trump. They don't want to look at themselves in the press. They don't want to look at some of these leading Democratic candidates who have said horrible things. They don't want to look at college campuses, which have become cesspools of hate and cesspools
That's
of
right.
racial division. Nothing there. I mean, nothing there. So, you
right.
know.
Well, when Bolsonaro comes to the United States, he is going to be, I'm sure that there will be many feminists writing about some of the comments that he's made about. And this is the one, to be honest with you, Bill, this is the one area where I think Bolsonaro has to be a little careful, because he sometimes shoots from the hip, as they say,
yeah.
and he's made some really rough remarks about homosexuals and LGBT and all of that, and I think it might be wise for him, really, to tone that down.
Sure.
Just so that he doesn't have... have that issue, but he's coming at it. He says he's coming at it from the standpoint of morality, and honestly, his approach is, I don't care what you think. This is what I think. If you don't like me, vote against me. Well, today, 55% of the people, apparently in the polls or in what we're hearing, 55% in a country of almost 200 million people, that's a pretty big victory, Bill.
It is, and it's a victory that may have a an effect all over the continent of Latin America.
I think so. I think so, because there have been other. Chile recently turned to the right again. Argentina did, although they're having problems. There's a lot of leftover from the previous administration, so he's had a lot to clean up down there. But Brazil is really the most important country. One thing that he is has been talking very tough about too is cutting off not diplomatic relations with Cuba, but getting very tough with Cuba, because the prior socialist government basically had been taking on all these Cuban doctors, and they would pay the Cuban government for them. And he's talking about doing away with that. So we'll see. We wish him well, and I think if he can do something about the crime, I think most Brazilians would find him to be a pretty successful president, because the crime in Brazil, in the big cities like Rio and Sao Paulo, is really out of control, Bill. I mean, it is.
Yes, we're here.
I talked to some friends here in the area from Brazil, and I was talking to a lady who was telling me that mothers are afraid of sending their kids to school. I mean, you know, everybody's basically living in the fear of the crime. And anyway, we wish him well. One quick thing I wanted to say, Bill, before we get into the news, this is another anniversary of the dedication of the Statue of Liberty. And that is really, I think, in many ways, the biggest, one of the biggest symbols in the country's history, Bill.
Yes, it is. It was a gift from the people of France to the people of the United States. It has been in New York Harbor since 1886,
yeah.
1886.
Yeah.
It came in sections. And they would, and before it was completely assembled here, they had to put the sections, I think, in parts of Manhattan for storage. I have been to the Statue of Liberty. I've climbed the Statue of Liberty. I saw it last year again when we took some friends around Manhattan Island, the Standard Circle Line tour. It's a remarkable sight. It tends to turn green over time because of the ocean air, and then they have to clean it up and they try to restore it to its original color. But I kind of like the green because it does look old. And, of course, on the base of the statue is the famous Emma Lazarus poem, Give Me Your Tired, Your Poor, Your Huddled Masses, et cetera, et cetera. The original title of it was The Statue of Liberty Enlightening the World. And on there, she is holding a book which says on it in Roman numerals, July 4th, 1776. It's just a wonderful symbol because everyone around the world knows it.
Yes. No, you're right. It is really. And I was thinking, you know, your ancestors came here probably through Ellis Island, I'm going to guess. And when you were coming, you're coming on that boat from Europe, there was the Statue of Liberty almost confirming that you had made it to the United States.
Yes.
It was like right there.
Yes. Well, actually, my grandmother came in through Castle Garden, which is at the tip of Manhattan, and would have seen the Statue of Liberty also. There was a period in the 1890s when Ellis Island was closed because of a large fire that basically destroyed the facilities. And for those years, like my grandmother, people would come in at Castle Garden, which is at the very tip of Manhattan Island. My grandfather came in through San Francisco, which many people don't realize. People came into this country from many, many in many, many cities, and then he made it across the United States to New York. But yes, and we, you know, every time I see the Statue of Liberty, I realize that every soldier going to Europe from New York in World War II saw that, saw the exact
right.
same thing we're seeing.
That's right, and then coming back, I assume they saw it too. And to me,
yes.
I never had that experience in my family, but I would think, you know, you're on that boat for weeks, and all of a sudden you're getting close to New York, and there she is. It's like saying, okay, we're home, you know, we're here.
Yes,
and
oh yes.
So it's got to have a tremendous value just on that. President Cleveland was the president who dedicated the Statue of Liberty. A little
yes.
trivia question there. Well, Bill, a lot of news during the week, and I want to let's go with the midterms. Let's start with that. We have one more show before the midterms. And I'm actually, you know, I feel pretty good about the Senate, and I think the House right now could go either way, but by a few votes. So if the Republicans keep it, they may keep it by, I don't know, 5 to 10 votes. If the Democrats win it, they'll win it by 5 to 10 votes. And I would like to see the Democrat Party get anything done with a margin of victory like that. I think it may be the worst thing that ever happened to them, Bill.
Well, it's quite possible, because a margin of 5 to 10 votes is not a working majority, because they still have a certain number of Democrats who will owe their election to moderate voters. I mean, and they are not going to commit suicide politically to satisfy the California delegation, which is, you know, really almost halfway to a mental facility. And I think that many people who think that they're going to come in and get a, quote, progressive Congress may be wrong. Now, one thing that we will find is that as Gerald Nadler takes over the House Judiciary Committee, there will be investigations that he will launch into President Trump. They will go nowhere. They will probably, the California people will probably launch an impeachment drive. Maxine Waters will demand that Trump be impeached, because that's her entire platform.
Right.
And it may not happen, or it may happen. I mean, look, they may get a – they would need – because I can't imagine every Democrat voting for impeachment, considering where some of them come from. And certainly he's not going to – I can't imagine any Republican voting for impeachment.
Right.
So I think that may very well be a dead issue, unless – we are wrong, and there is a blue wave, and that, you know, if they have a majority of, you know, 30 seats or so, they could probably do some of these things. In terms of legislation, they obviously would need the U.S. Senate, and the Senate, while I don't think anything is ever safe, it looks like it's going to be another Republican Senate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. I do remember, Bill, back in 2006, the last time there was a big wave that put Democrats in control of the House. And the issue that year, of course, was the Iraq War. And there were many, many of them who were elected on that ground, that they were going to end the war. And they weren't able to do it, well, for one thing, the Senate, and also because President Bush would veto any such effort. But at the end, they became more mad at each other because they couldn't get anything done.
Yes.
They couldn't end the war. And so I'm beginning to think that, you know, again, this is all maybe wishful thinking on my part, but I believe, based on everything I've seen, that there's not going to be necessarily a blue wave, because if you have a blue wave, then they would likely pick up some seats in the Senate or keep some of the ones. So my guess is that there's going to be a blue and a red wave. There's going to be two of them, actually. And the Republicans will probably pick up a few seats in the Senate. The Democrats may pick up the House, but it's going to be by such small numbers. And if you look at the map of the seats they have to win to get this majority, Bill, most of those seats are not exactly in Nancy Pelosi territory.
No, they're really not. No, that's exactly correct. And the California delegation has an outsized influence in the Democratic Party. It's a hard left delegation, except maybe for a couple of seats. And they will try to dictate to the rest of the party, but I don't think it's going to work.
Well, I think they're going to end up fighting among themselves, frankly. That's what I think is going to happen, and they're going to figure out that it's easier said than done. Also, impeachment at some point, because I mean, I remember the Clinton impeachment and the Nixon. Nixon was never impeached, but there were articles of impeachment. And these things have to be – these articles have to be written – so you have to have some law breaking. You can't just say we're going to impeach him because we promised we would do. And then you have to go to the House, I guess, and present your articles of impeachment. And I don't think they've thought through very well what those articles are.
No.
I think they're probably going to sit there and say, okay, you have the majority now. They're going to go, really? So now we have to write articles of impeachment. And yeah, that's what you promised. So I don't know. This may be one of those, be careful what you wish for, because you may get it, Bill.
I think so. You know, governing is always much more difficult than winning the election.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's right.
You know, the parties are very divided. There is very little incentive to compromise, very little incentive to work together in today's atmosphere. But if the Democrats take the House, it is conceivable that everything they do can wind up as a negative.
Yes, and if they try to do something about those tax cuts or about, you know, any of that, and the economy turns south, Trump will just blame him for it.
That's exactly right.
So that's the other thing, you know.
Right. If things go well economically, even with the Democratic House, Trump will take the credit and say we've kept the country on course. But if things go badly, he will simply say the business community has lost confidence in Washington because of the Democratic Party. And this is the reaction. And of course, you can be sure that if the Democrats take the House, that a very large chunk of their delegation will be on that fringe element of the party. And they will say anything that gets them some attention, and they will that voice will now be magnified if they're in the majority. And it could, as you said, be the worst thing that ever happened to them.
Well, I would like to know what committee Maxine Waters is going to be the chairwoman of or chairperson, because that would make for some very interesting entertainment, Bill.
Oh, I think she might very well wind up as a committee chair. Maybe they'll give her own committee. The committee of nutty ideas. She could be there, and some of the others could be there. But she is quite a piece of work. And, of course, the television networks, the news organizations, will focus on her because she's been so active and you know, she is so so newsworthy in some of her crazy remarks.
Well, I can't wait for the reaction of many in the media the day after. If
yes.
The Democrats do pick up the House, even by a few seats, it'll be the most important election in the history of civilization.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah. If the Republicans hold on to the House, then of course it's because there was suppression of votes.
Suppression of votes, and they brought out the hate mongers. Everybody who came out to vote was a hate monger.
Yeah, that's right. They'll say that, you know, Trump did it again. You know, he focused on the hatred and he got all those hating white people to show up
yes.
And that's what they will say. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, we'll see where we are next Sunday. But right now I actually feel pretty good about it, meaning the worst case scenario is the Senate will be Republican by a few more seats. And, yes, the Republicans could lose the House, but we may have one of these 220. I mean, I was watching Larry Sabato, and he was saying that this thing could be like four or five seats either way, Bill. It's really amazing.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be interesting if the Democrats won the House by one seat or two seats? You know how powerful a small group of Democrats could be in that case? They could trade their votes off with either party because they would come from moderate districts, and they could wind up as the kingmakers in the House.
Yeah, and maybe disappoint all the people like your Evita there in the Bronx.
she's waiting, as she says, to be inaugurated. She doesn't know that only the president is inaugurated, but she's going to be down there. All the cameras will be on her, little Evita. And, and she'll probably make a lot of dumb comments, which is what she always does, and get nothing done. But let's not forget the fact that we're 2 years away from a presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be again, it's hard to make predictions. We have to be careful. You know, people biology can take its course. Things can happen that will change everything. But the 2020 election looks as if it's going to be an absolute political bloodbath.
Yes. Yes, it sure looks that way.
But who are the Democrats going to put up? Who do they have?
It.
Joe Biden? He won't know there's an election. And they're going to have to remind him. And they're talking about others. Now, if this guy gets elected governor of Florida, Gillum, who's a real socialist, mm-hmm. there may be a big wave for him. And it might succeed. Remember, Obama got elected, and Obama
mm-hmm.
was kind of a socialist. But the
mm-hmm.
difference was that this guy is much rougher. I mean, Obama was smart enough to know you can't go all the way, with the socialist bit. This guy has no hesitation, and he plays the race card all the time. But I would imagine that if the Democrats get elected, he will be a very, very hot choice for vice president.
That's right. And, of course, there's also talk that he could have some legal problems, too.
Yes.
The FBI is looking into some of his past, and so this is a fellow that could be having some difficult times legally, that is, down the road. Let's take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the midterms, the blame game going on, as well as the caravan. Be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, there were two bad things that happened this week. Of course, the packages, they finally caught up with the person who allegedly sent the packages on Friday. He turns out to be apparently a Trump supporter, although this guy had spent – I'm amazed this guy was out in the street considering the rap sheet that he had.
Yes.
And then of course, the other terrible thing that happened was this shooting on Saturday, which was just, I mean, I don't know how to call it. It was just awful. But those two things are pretty bad. But I think what makes it worse is this blame game, automatically blaming Trump, trying to somehow connect Trump. I don't remember anything like this when a congressman was almost killed by apparently a Bernie Sanders supporter. Or when the Senator Cruz was attacked, it seems like there's a lot of selective indignation out there, Bill.
Very selective indignation, and I think it's absolutely awful when you blame a president for things that terrible that he had nothing to do with. I saw that even David Gergen, who used to be an intelligent person, mm-hmm. coming out and saying Trump has unleashed the forces of hate. He didn't unleash the forces of hate. Not everything he says is responsible, that we know, and he has said some things he shouldn't have said, that we know, but the forces of hate in this country have always been there. What really unleashed those forces was the 60s generation and the lowering of standards in every area of American society. College campuses, not mentioned, by the way, this week, where hatred is literally taught in classrooms, where you have racial and ethnic divisions that are enforced. Those are the things that have unleashed the forces of hate. And it is just so wrong. I mean, it reminds me of the people who try to blame Franklin Roosevelt for Pearl Harbor, that he knew mm-hmm. and he did nothing about it. These are conspiracy theorists. But in every discussion, that is the thing that comes up. I had written yesterday that I was a little bit encouraged after this terrible tragedy in Pittsburgh that the response of the news organizations was rather restrained. Now, that may have been because they had on their weekend crews, you know, not their big theatrical mm-hmm. stars that they put on during the week. But there was a sense of restraint, even on CNN, and they were right back this morning with Fareed Zakaria having on a group of potted plants and talking heads from the liberal Jewish community. Instead of going back and talking about where anti-Semitism is really coming from in this society, this is one man, but a lot of it is coming from the political left on college campuses,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
they don't even mention that at all. I mean, it's been going on for years. They never mentioned it at all. And what is almost offensive about this is when they start talking about, well, these attacks on George Soros, who's a big financial contributor to the Democratic Party, are anti-Semitic, and it should have been a warning to us. For goodness sake, anybody who knows the history of George Soros knows that George Soros is an apostate Jew. They say that the Jew, George Soros, he's an apostate Jew. He has nothing to do with the Jewish community. He's an opponent of the State of Israel. And yet these people go on and suddenly make him into a victim of anti-Semitism. He is not. He has nothing to do with that at all. This is, you know, a hatred that is embedded in some parts of society. This individual yesterday was obviously a hater and a man with a long history of hatred. But I think that to start blaming people in the political class for what is for this horrible incident is the height of irresponsibility.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things about President Trump, or before he became president, Bill, when he was Donald Trump businessman in New York. There was a lot of things about him that I didn't like, and people who know me well know that I didn't support him in the primaries, and I have my problems with him once in a while when he'll say this or that. But I don't remember any person before Donald Trump announced for the presidency who ever said he was anti-Semite or racist.
That's right.
I don't remember any. I mean, his daughter, I believe,
is an Orthodox Jew.
Yes, so I mean...
And he
respects it, and
he's always respected it. And when he was here in New York, look, I didn't particularly like him. He's a blowhard. He's a braggart.
Sure.
But this man, one year, was selected as Grand Marshal of the Salute to Israel parade. They don't choose anti-Semites for that. You know, they really don't. And he is not a racist, and they claim that he is also anti-Hispanic because of his attitudes toward immigration. This man ran companies in New York that employed large numbers of minorities, including minorities in executive positions. There is nothing in his background to suggest that he is a bigot in any way. In fact, quite the opposite. It's been pointed out. He has done more economically for the black community in America than any president has. And, of course, you know, but they will only give credit if it's a Democrat in the White House. But, I mean, this has just gone much too far, claiming that the president is racist or that he says these things to stir up racial hatreds, absolutely untrue. And even though I'm not, you know, like you, I did not support him in the primaries. I did not vote for him. I didn't vote for president the last time. But I have seen nothing to suggest that there is a racial or religious or ethnic motive to the things he does. The things he does, he seem to be based on exactly the things he talks about, keeping our borders secure, keeping our country safe. You know, he may have some problems with certain school policies that he thinks are wrong, but not on a racial basis, never.
Right, and this is it. I mean, I was not a strong follower of Donald Trump, the businessman. I mean, everybody knew who he was because this guy has been in the news for 30 years. You know, I mean, he's been around since the 1980s that I can remember. I used to see his face, you know, on business magazines or just in the news. Of course, he was in the news a little bit because of his personal life. That kept him probably in the news as well. But, you know, he was always in the news. He was there. He's being interviewed. At no time did I ever hear a Democrat say, I got to give back the money he's donated because he's a racist. At no time, you know, did anybody in the Clinton Foundation say, no, Donald, thanks for your interest, but we cannot take $100,000 from you because you hate women or you're a racist. So,
absolutely.
I mean...
That's correct, yeah. And, of course, he has people in his family who have a variety of viewpoints, but you're absolutely correct. That never came up once in his life.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden now he's a racist, he's promoting hatred. And I don't know anything that he has done to promote this person from shooting on Saturday afternoon or wherever it was. That shooting, that man who shot, as I understand too, and he's actually not a Trump supporter.
No,
that's
not
what,
at all. He's very anti-Trump.
Yeah. Exactly.
No,
so, I mean.
He's a hater, and he is reflecting a hatred that has been there for centuries, and just as racists do people who are against this group or that group, but to blame it on Trump is just awful. But that is primarily a function of certain editorial writers in the country. It's a function of CNN, which has lost all its credibility. The idea of trying to pin this on the president, it's very damaging to the country, it's very divisive, and it's very untrue.
Now, one of the things that I think a lot of the people in the media criticized was what President Trump said after the shooting, when he said that there should have been maybe protection or a policeman or something there to stop this shooter. Now, I happen to believe that's true.
I think that
in these public places, we're just going to have to come to the realization that public places expose people to things like this. And I don't want to see guards outside a church, for example, but I certainly would not mind having people in a church with the ability to carry, certain people or whatever, with the ability to carry a gun to protect us from incidents like this. But had there been a guard at the door there, this shooting probably would have been a lot different, Bill.
Yes, and apparently many houses of worship, many other institutions in the country now do have armed guards. Sometimes they don't announce it, and sometimes the weapons are not evident, but I know that there are many Jewish community centers that have really ramped up security. I'm certain that some churches, especially black churches, have ramped up security. I've always believed that you should have protection, that is the first responsibility of society, to protect its citizens. And if it means having the people trained in defense, protecting your institution, well, then so be it. It's not something we necessarily want, but it is something we might have to have as part of our obligation to the society.
It would be interesting, Bill, unfortunately, the people who were killed, they're not going to have an opportunity to answer that. But it would be interesting to talk to some of the people who were there, who survived. And it would be interesting to ask them that question and say, do you think it would have been wise, or do you think it would have been a good idea to have, let's say, someone here to protect you? My gut feeling is that many would have said yes, because when we had that church shooting in South Texas, Bill, earlier this year, in Texas, many people left their guns in the car because you're not supposed to bring a gun. So the law-abiding citizen, he obeyed the law and left the gun in the car. But this guy walked in and he was shooting. And they were interviewing some people after, and they were saying, yes, it would have been very convenient to have had a gun at the church, because we would have stopped this guy from doing as much shooting as he did.
Well, if you remember in Texas many years ago, the Luby shooting, the famous Luby shooting,
that's right,
where about 22 people were killed, there was a man in the restaurant who said, I had a gun in my car, and had I had it with me, I could have stopped this in a few seconds.
That's right.
That doesn't mean you could save everybody, but you could save many. And that was also the case during the Columbine shooting in Colorado, Columbine High School, where Columbine did have an armed guard. And Columbine is not one building. Apparently, it's a campus. And the armed guard was on the other side of the campus when this began. Mm-hmm. He jumped into his car, got to where the shooting was, and he confronted the shooter, not a few feet away. The guy was about 60 feet away, but the shooter ducked for cover. And in that time, they were able to evacuate a number of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And in the after-action report, it was pointed out that that very man, just with his presence, saved a lot of lives.
Well, but even if you just disable the shooter a bit, at least, let's say, make it difficult for him to or force him to have to defend himself against somebody else shooting at him, that'll stop lives right there.
Right.
I mean, that'll save lives, I would say, right there. But I thought it was interesting because when the president made that remark, immediately you have all of these people saying, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And it's like, actually, I do think he knows what he's talking about, because I support President Trump on that point. I think we should have more protections in schools and public places. You know, if I go somewhere and there's a large crowd, I would feel a lot. I don't have to see the gun in somebody's pocket, or I don't have to see the secret police or whatever, but I would feel a heck of a lot better if there was somebody there who could protect this, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, again, the first responsibility of government is to protect its citizens. The first responsibility of citizens is to protect each other. And we protect jewelry stores in this country better than we do children. I mean,
That's right.
To any mall, if there's a jewelry store, it's protected by an armed guard. You go to most schools in America, they have no security at all.
No, you're exactly right. I can remember many times walking into my kids' high school and feeling exactly that way and saying, wait a minute, I just walked in here. And, you know, the way it was set up is that the door was here, and then the office was maybe 10 feet down. But anybody could have walked in, Bill, and anybody could have walked into that school with bad intentions, and they could have gotten pretty far because there was nobody there to stop you, nobody there to check you out.
Yes. Well, they usually give you the following answers when that comes up. They will. I've been to meetings and I've heard discussions with people, and usually in these discussions there is somebody who claims to be a psychologist saying, well, what I'm concerned about is the children being traumatized every day seeing someone with a gun. For goodness sake, they see cops with guns on the way to school. They see cops with guns on television. They would not be traumatized. They would probably feel protected, which is what they should feel. And then, of course, you get somebody who gets up. Always, you always find this at a meeting, who will say, but that's not who we are. It's not who we are. Well, I always say, fella, speak for yourself. You know, it's who I am.
Right.
You know, I want to see children protected first. Believe me, I come from areas in New York where if you asked a group of people, if somebody burst into the school and had an M16 pointed at your child's head, what would you want done at that moment? And they would sit there and wonder about it. I mean, they, you know, and then you would see them switching their eyes around saying, did I give the right answer? Or will I be invited to the next cocktail party? And there's a lot of that ideological conformity. And it is something that's killing us. It's a kind of political correctness, and it's killing us. Of course we should protect institutions, and of course we should protect schools. It's really a no-brainer.
Right. No, I agree. But I thought the reaction to President Trump was so predictable. I mean, he
yes.
made a statement, and automatically, well, you know, the president is pandering to the NRA, and you know, he's trying to get the vote out in the midterm. He's using this to get the vote out. I don't think so. I think he made a very sensible remark. I thought that he made, and
well,
I'm
he
sure
did.
There's
now,
a lot of
now. In yes, he did make a sensible remark. Now, in his awkward way, and it is an awkward way, he
yes,
probably
it is.
Should have
That's
waited to say it. You know, that's the problem. He made it too quickly after the event. He should have waited. It was a perfectly logical thing to say. But his sense of timing and his sense of propriety can use some work, I have to say.
That's right. No,
but
I agree.
What
I
he
agree
said
with that.
Was absolutely true. You know, and of course, I did hear a discussion naturally on CNN, of course on CNN, where there was some guy commenting on that comment, saying, well, what he's talking about is the old answer of, you stop a bad guy with a gun with a good guy with a gun, but of course that doesn't work. Oh yes, it does. It works, and it is absolutely something that should be done whenever possible. But you know, it is true. We don't want to do it, but sometimes you have to do things.
Well, as you know, after the school shooting and the church shooting in South Texas, and then there was that other one close to Houston. A little bit later this year, I was at a panel over at one of the local channels, and they were asking me about it, and I said that the real problem with gun control, or the debate about gun control, is that the people who really have the most interesting opinions are not the ones that are introduced on TV. The
That's
ones
right.
that we should be talking to are the ones who had a gun in their head, because
I
guarantee you that if I have a gun to my head. And I'm just lucky to make it. There was people. I mean, one of the ladies that was at that church in South Texas, she was basically saying, "I didn't know if he was going to kill me. Out of sheer luck, he killed somebody else."
That's right.
But I had no idea. I mean, I was at the mercy of good luck or whatever it was. And I said to the panelists, I said, "Those are the people we should be talking to, because they're the only ones who have ever really come to terms with this issue in a real way." They're the ones who had a gun pointed at them. The rest of
That's
us,
right.
we're just dealing in theory. It is just theory that we're dealing in, or we're bringing up, you know, studies from, well, in Australia, this would have never happened. Well, nice study, but what does that have to do with somebody shooting at you in a church in South Texasville?
Yes, that's right. And this is not Australia. Actually, the research shows that other countries actually have much higher rates of gun violence than we give them credit for. But a lot of the stuff is reported differently. Do we have a gun problem in this country? Do we have a violence problem? We have a violence problem. The fact is that Vermont, which has the highest rate of gun ownership in the United States, has one of the lowest rates of crime. And Chicago, which has extensive gun control laws, has a very high rate of crime. So gun control, yes, gun control would probably eventually have some effect. It would probably take several generations because there are an estimated 300 million guns in the United States. And many of those guns are used every day for self-protection, not actively but passively. The fact that if you go to a store or a mall in certain areas, people know that those malls and stores are patrolled by people with guns.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. But I just think that the people in those panels that we see talking about gun control, it's all theory. Not one of them has ever been on the ground with a gun pointed at them.
It's just a bunch of theory.
Let me take a quick little break. Yeah, let me take a little break, Bill, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little about the caravan and take a look at some of the politics of next week. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, obviously another big story, which is I think having political impact too as well, is the story of the caravan. And that may be happening this week, Bill.
Well, yes, and that is, of course, this group of thousands of people who coming north from Central America to try to get into the United States, and I think they will probably try to rush the border when they eventually get here. They have had offers made to them by Mexico that were very generous. I'm sure those offers were worked out with the United States to stay south of our border. They've turned it down. They said, we want to get to the United States. I don't know what's behind it. I mean, I have no independent information, but it does seem awfully interesting that this is occurring right at the time of our election. And I don't believe in coincidences in politics. I think there must be something to that. The president has said there are Middle Eastern people among them. Thomas Friedman of the New York Times was on this morning saying that's a lie. I wonder how he would know it's a lie.
That's right.
Has he been down there, you know, with his sombrero on, Thomas Friedman,
that's right.
and his guitar? I don't think so. It probably is true. There is a certain amount of infiltration from the Middle East that comes through our southern border because the Iranians had set up bases in Venezuela. And we know that there's activity down there. So I think that while the president probably doesn't have exact numbers, I suspect that his suspicions are correct. But this is I don't know if they'll get to the border by Election Day, but I think that was probably their dream. So they were probably inspired to a certain degree by the violence on the border between Gaza and Israel, where those very dramatic scenes of firebombs being thrown by the protesters and how much impact they had around the world. I suspect they're really coming to make an impact of some kind, and they want to live in the United States. Well, you know, we have laws in the United States, and I think the president's position is going to be supported by the great majority of people, saying if you want to come here, we'll show you how to apply for a legal an admission to the United States that is legal. Rather than come in illegally. We cannot have the laws of the United States broken. But we do have, one of our two political parties, a very strong element that believes that these laws are immoral, that borders should be open, that people should be allowed to come here anytime they wish. And it's crazy thinking, of course. But they do think it, and they do have power, and they do control the state of California.
That's right. I thought it was interesting this week that several media organizations were trying to reach the Robert O'Rourke Beto campaign for a statement about the caravan, and he didn't have one. They didn't have one.
No.
I thought it was interesting that he doesn't want to touch this, and I suspect a lot of Democrats don't want to touch this either. Because this could be, see, there's another issue too, which always gets lost in the American news media. They say Hispanics, and they assume that every Hispanic, and we've talked about this before, but in this particular issue, we're only Hispanics here because we speak Spanish. That's the only common denominator that we have. But somebody from Central America has about as much in common, let's say, with someone in South Texas as I do with someone in China. The reality is there's nothing, there's no relationship. There's no history between them. There's no, there's nothing. So I have friends in South Texas who have told me that when Central Americans come over, they have a lot of problems in South Texas because there's no natural atmosphere for them. It's not like when the Cubans came in with Mariel in 1980, and there were many Cubans like me back then, and I remember my father as well. We were very troubled by that because we didn't like the chaotic nature that was done, and we were afraid that Castro would use it to bring up criminals, and he did do that. But it was a lot easier for the Cubans who came in through Mariel to adapt themselves to Miami than it is for Central Americans to the United States. It's not that easy unless you go to Los Angeles where they have a sizable Central American community, Bill. So they say Hispanics, but I talk to a lot of Hispanics here who don't necessarily agree with this caravan either, Bill.
Oh, I would imagine that many Hispanics in America, from what I know of the different Hispanic communities, would disagree with it because those people are here to take their jobs. I mean, and also, I think it is, you know, that people who come here legally are very proud of the fact that they came legally and followed American law. And I don't think they have a high regard for those who don't. You know, people assume that people of a group will support every other person in that group. That's not true at all. There are divisions within groups, and there are divisions politically, there are divisions ethnically. There are often squabbles within groups. That's not an unusual situation. But I just don't think the press knows how to report the story or even cares.
Well, I think they're, again, they think all Hispanics are the same.
Yes.
That we all think the same way. But I know there's problems in Mexico with these people. We're being told, you know, that they're being supported by the Mexican people. That's not 100% true. There's a lot of Mexicans who are, who don't like what happens when they go through a town and you know, they dirty the town or whatever. I mean, that's a lot of people to be going through a country.
Oh, sure.
And I'm kind of surprised that I still think the government of Mexico is going to stop them, especially now. And again, I could be dead wrong on this, but I just get the feeling that they made that offer to them, and the offer was probably intended to legalize them, to give them at least legal status, so that they wouldn't be in the country as illegal immigrants. But they rejected that, so now they are once again illegal immigrants in Mexico, and Mexico has a very tough policy against that, Bill.
Yes, yeah, well, we're going to certainly find out soon, unless they're headed off within Mexico. We will find out soon exactly what this is going to be about. Now, I am hoping it doesn't interfere with the election, only because I think it's an extraneous thing for an election, and I don't want to give any support to those who plan these things around election time because it's not proper. But the Democrats apparently have been instructed, the Democratic candidates, not to talk about immigration. But to many Americans, especially in that area of the country, it is a major issue.
Well, especially if you're in a competitive election. If you're in a competitive election, the Republican is going to bring it up. So you're going to have to answer the question whether you like it or not. You're going to have to answer the question in debates or whatever it may be. Bill, quick look at next week. I think the midterms are probably going to be the big topic, the caravan and all of that. Anything else that you're looking at next week, Bill?
Well, the anything else is the big question mark. Will anything happen during the week?
Right.
That will influence the election or simply be an event of you know, monumental importance. But, you know, if something doesn't happen, then we will be focusing on our midterms. We'll be focusing on certain states, and there'll be a lot of last-minute polling. I think the polling will be one of the big stories to come out of this election. How accurate was it? Or how inaccurate was it? And I think we may be in for some surprises on election night.
I think so. I think so, because especially in the House, where the polling by nature is not that good to begin with. In
yes,
the states,
that's true.
It's a little bit better. But I don't know how they take polls in all these districts. I mean, I don't know how they do it. And
I
don't know how reliable.
Once, yeah, I think once during the election season. That's why off-year elections are very hard to poll, because, first of all, turnout is very hard to predict. And as you say, polling an individual congressional district is difficult because it's so expensive.
That's right. And so as far as what they tell me, it's also very unreliable because you
yes.
have such a small population to do a sample anyway. Well, Bill, as always, thank you for your time and enjoy yourself. Your Dodgers are down, not your Dodgers, but used to be your Dodgers, are down 3-1. But the other night they played an 18-inning game, Bill.
I saw it. That reminds me of the old days.
Yes. 18-inning game that started at 7 o'clock Central Time and ended at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I bet a lot of people didn't get to see it.
Probably not. Well, these are the imposter Dodgers. They're not really, even know if they know how to play. And the Boston Red Sox, but it looks like the Red Sox, may wind up very successful in this series.
I think so, because they're up 3-1, and that's tough. It's tough to come back from 3-1. The odds are against you. I'll put it that way. But then again, the Giants. So the Dodgers had that big lead on the Giants one year, if you remember that.
Oh yes. Although I don't know, has anyone ever come back from 3-1? I believe one team did.
Oh, several times. Yeah, several
yes.
times. It's happened several times, but I don't remember the last time. But it's happened about a dozen times actually. In World Series history, it's happened, but it's hard to do. A lot of
yes.
things have to go your way to
yes.
come back from 3-1. You need a lucky break here or there, but it has happened. It could happen. These are two very good teams, actually. I would be surprised if the Red Sox take it in five games, because these are really two very good teams. I like to see them go six or seven, actually.
I like to. Yeah, I always like a seven-game series. Then you have that great final game.
That's right.
You're right.
Well, Bill, thank you, as always, for your time. Have a wonderful week, and we'll do it again.
Absolutely. Looking forward to next Sunday.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, is always chatting, looking back at what happened during the week. What can I say? A very interesting week of news with the midterms, the caravan, and everything else going on. It was indeed a very interesting week. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. And once again, let me wish my friend Bob Jaggers, who's listening, let me wish you a very good evening. And hopefully we'll have a chance to see you during the week. Bye-bye, everybody.